Hello and welcome to this special exploring session on the 1622 Lord Mayor's Show, released for the 400th anniversary of the event. We recorded this many months ago as a prep session for some sort of live event, which, sadly, the show gods have not smiled upon. However, we do intend to keep trying to mark the 29th of October each year and get maybe the next Lord Mayor's Show, 1623, lined up and running in some way. In fact, there are similar sessions to this for 1623 and 1624, so we are thinking ahead. Links to those YouTube sessions are available in the show description. This closes our month on civic pageantry, but there will be more to come, either here or on the YouTube next year, as not only do we have a Lord Mayor's Show to think about, but there will be some coronation action to get down with in May. Till next time, I hand you over to Past Robert and the session. Enjoy. Hello and welcome to this second look exploring session, looking at the Triumphs of Honour and Virtue by Thomas Middleton, a solemnity performed through the city on the 29th of October 1622. This is a Lord Mayor's Show. We, if you've been paying attention on the podcast and to a lesser degree on the YouTube channel, we have done a Lord Mayor's Show, a reconstruction thereof, featuring at least one person in this room in a very prominent fashion. In fact, we have last year's Lord Mayor actually in the room, so that's quite good. So we did 1621 last year, and as it is 2022 at the time of recording, we're looking to do 1622 in some way. And our broad plan is every year we're going to do a Lord Mayor's Show. Even when the Lord Mayor's Show was stopped by plague, we'll find a different year to do. But broadly speaking, we're going to try and do the 400th anniversary of each Lord Mayor's Show going from the 1620s onwards as an ongoing thing. What happens when we get to the 1630s? We're not sure because we found Thomas Hayward's to be a bit dull. We might go back and do some of the earlier ones and do some do-overs. But that's the plan, is we want to mark Lord Mayor's Show every year, the original one from October the 29th or occasionally 30th if it hit a Sunday. So that's what we're planning to do. So this is effectively a planning meeting for what we're going to do. Now, we don't plan to do it the same way every year. We're planning to some years to do a relatively low energy, relatively simple thing. And that's sort of what this year is about. Last year, we did quite a big thing. It wasn't as big as it could get. We could get much bigger than what we did last year. But there was a stage, there was costumes, there were actors. There was quite a lot of moving parts. This year, we're primarily looking to mark the date and get a recording of the text and hopefully do some series of performances on the day live somewhere in London. And we have various options about how we might do that. To work our way through the text of this particular pageant and make some decisions today, we have joining us Tracy, who, is a newbie to civic pageantry, knows nothing about it at all. Tracy, introduce yourself.
I'm a windy cap. This is much. As Rob said, I don't really know anything about this stuff, so I'm here just to learn, really.
Otherwise known as Tracy Hilger, author of Pageantry and Power, Cultural History of the Early Modern Lord Mayor's Show. Well, this isn't a sponsorship thing at all. We're not getting paid for saying that. other things about civic culture are available by the same author. Greg, introduce yourself, please. Or should I say Lord Mayor, soon to vacate your post.
Yes, one felt one should pop back. Greg here. I think most people in this room know that I've turned into a complete Lord Mayor's nut in the last 24 months. And it's so nice to be back. And it's lovely to see Tracy. Yes!
Also joining us, reading. I haven't been saying what people are reading. Greg is reading. Will be reading some of the prose description. Will also be a queen. And it should be important to note at this stage that some of the text is potentially problematic. We haven't fully appreciated what we're going to be doing with some of those elements. But obviously, nobody here has been cast as parts. We're just reading parts. So nobody here is to be construed as appropriating any kind of particular role. We'll be reading Antiquity and Honour later on. Is
Lindsay Beecham, actor in Kirkcaldy in Scotland, and I unfortunately wasn't able to come to the last Lord Mayor's show, but the photos alone were incredible.
And by the time this video goes out, not only will all the audio should hopefully have been released on the podcast, the recordings of the show are already out there, but there's additional audio material to go out. And also all the videos hopefully should be photos will be archived online as well. Links will be in the show description. And finally, last year was All the Knights. And at least one of the stations reading Virtue for us today is...
Hi, it's Tom from Brighton.
And I'm your host slash pageant master, Robert Crichton. And yes, we're going to dive now into the Triumphs of Honour and Virtue. We're going to go through it relatively slowly, a bit like a first look, but then we're going to go through it a bit faster as well, having made some decisions as we go. I'm not quite going to write a script for what we're going to do as we go, but I am definitely going to start sketching some things out as we go. For newbies, I will put up in the background the traditional route map for the Lord Mayor Show that we have. The Lord Mayor Show always starts at the Guildhall, heads down to the river, goes on boats to Westminster, returns after the official ceremony to usually somewhere in the region of St Paul's Stairs, and then heads up to St Paul's Churchyard, where the major pageants occur. Walking along Cheapside, or riding along Cheapside, past various stops, Little Conduit, the Standard, etc. Back to the Guildhall, where some nunchables occur. And then the Lord Mayor usually heads back to St Paul's for a service, and then eventually is allowed to go home. So that's our sort of general route, as it were. So without further ado, what I'm going to ask is, Lindsay, if you can just read the opening bump on the text. Now, these texts are very incomplete. There are certain elements of this Lord Mayor show that we do not have. But Lindsay, if I could ask you to read the opening bump on this particular text.
The Triumphs of Honour and Virtue, a noble solemnity performed through the city at the sole cost and charges of the Honourable Fraternity of Grocers, at the confirmation and establishment of their most worthy brother, the Right Honourable Peter Proby, in the high office of His Majesty's Lieutenant, Lord Mayor, and Chancellor of the famous City of London. Taking beginning at his lordship's going, and perfecting itself after his return from receiving the oath of mayoralty at Westminster, on the morrow after Simon and Jude's day being the 29th of October, 1622, by Thomas Middleton, Gent. London, printed by Nicholas Oakes, 1622. To the honour of him to whom the noble fraternity of grocers, his worthy brothers, have dedicated their loves, in costly triumphs, the Right Honourable Peter Proby, Lord Mayor of this renowned city. To be his servant that hath served two royal princes, and deserved so worthily of both, the same, call not service, rather fame, at your lordship's command, Thomas Middleton.
So we'll just pause there at that initial bump. So what we've got here, we've got, obviously, we know it's by Thomas Middleton. Thomas Middleton towards the end of his career. He's got a few more years of playwriting to go, and a bit more other stuff to do. He wrote an awful lot of different material. But we've got the incoming Right Honourable Peter Proby. Tracy, what do we know about Peter?
Quite a lot. He's actually very interesting. He's like Edward Barkham, last year's Lord Mayor. He translated from another company to join the grocers. In this instance, he translated from the Barber Surgeons Company. And as Middleton implies, he actually says later on in the text, he's really a court man rather than a city man. There's a really interesting account of his life on the History of Parliament website, which is where I got this from, obviously. He was an MP for Liverpool, he was an MP for somewhere else. He was part of the household of both Elizabeth and James, hence hath served two royal princes. That's what that's referring to. He was very close to Heneage, one of the main officials at court, and so on and so forth. So he was quite an important man, a bit of a mover and shaker. He doesn't seem to have had anywhere near as much city connections as some of the other Lord Mayors from this period.
Just briefly to mention our outgoing Lord Mayor, Greg, anything interesting have happened in his year as mayor, do we know? I didn't ask any specific prep questions, so I don't know if you've got anything on.
He sounds like a thoroughly decent bloke, actually. There's some sort of testimonials to him being a thoroughly decent bloke. And he spent a lot of money restoring the church that had belonged to Holy Trinity Priory on the eastern side of the city at Aldgate. And there's a really nice piece in stone, epitaph in Stowe survey about Barkham. He was obviously very well liked. That's nice, isn't it, Jack Greg?
Well, yeah, I think we should with that looks like material. I think we should mark the outgoing Lord Mayor as well as the incoming one as part of the show. I think that's something we should do. I'm just making a note. Barkham, let's get some epitaphs in, or at least appropriate material to go in there. I like that, and that just little bit of verse in there as well. I wonder if we should pop that in as well. I know it wouldn't have been performative necessarily for the day itself, but. So there's lots of little bits of detail in there we can throw into the sort of introductory thing. Depending, I say, on the form of which we do this, I'm still sort of thinking about whether this is going to be something that we do more peripatetically or whether it's an indoor show that we can throw more information at. Because if it's an indoor show, you can tell indoor people information which you can't do on a street because you're shouting. So that there are options there. Any other thoughts about that? Not very helpful introductory bump. Okay, in that case, I'll ask Tracy to read the first bits of Middleton's prose describing things and setting us up for our first actual speech. So we're going to have in a moment the speech of the Black Queen, which Greg by lot has gained, and we'll read the bit of bump after that as well. Before we get to number two. So we'll just let this whole little chunk read out and then we'll discuss it after.
If foreign nations have been struck with admiration at the form, state and splendour of some yearly triumphs wherein art hath been but faintly imitated, there is fair hope that things where invention flourishes, clear art and her graceful proprieties should receive favour and encouragement from the content of the spectator, which next to the service of his honour and honourable society is the principal reward it looks for. Then not despairing of that common favour, this takes delight to present itself. And first, to begin with the worthy love of his noble fraternity, after his honour's return from Westminster, having received some service on the water, by the conduct of two artful triumphs, viz. The throne of virtue and the continent of India, which also by land attends his lordship's most wished arrival, accompanied with the whole body of the triumph, which near upon the time his honour's approach are decently and distinctly placed. The first, bearing the title of the continent of India, a triumph replenished with all manner of spice plants and trees bearing odour, attends his honour's arrival in Paul's churchyard. A black personage representing India called for her odours and riches, the queen of merchandise, challenging the most eminent seat advances herself upon a bed of spices, attended by Indians in antique habits, commerce, adventure, and traffic. Three habited like merchants, presenting to her view a bright future, bearing the inscription of knowledge, a sun appearing above the trees in brightest splendor and glory. The Black Queen before mentioned, lending a voice to these following words.
You that have eyes of judgment and discern things that the best of man and life concern, draw near. This black is but my native dye, but view me with an intellectual eye. As wise men shoot their beams forth, you'll then find a change in the complexion of the mind. I'm beauteous in my blackness. O ye sons of fame and honour, through my best part runs a spring of living waters, clear and true, found first by knowledge, which came first by you and your examples, blessed commerce, that by exchange settles such happiness of gums and fragrant spices. I confess my climate heaven does with abundance bless, and those you have from me, but what are they compared with odours whose scent ne'er decay? And those I have from you, plants of your youth, the savour of eternal life, sweet truth, exceeding all the odoriferous scent that from the beds of spices ever went. I that command, being prosperously possessed, the riches and the sweetness of the East, to that famed mountain Taurus, spreading forth my balmy arm, whose height does kiss the north. And in the sea Enos that, washed this land, hand, count my blessings not in those to stand, though they be large and fruitful, but confess all wealth consists in Christian holiness. To such celestial knowledge I was led by English merchants first enlightened, in honour of whose memory only three I instance here, all of this brotherhood free, to whose fames the great honour of this hour aptly belongs. But that man of power, the first and chiefest, to whose worth so clear, justice have given her sword up for a year. And as yon sun his perfect splendour shows, cheering the plants, and no clouds interpose his radiant comforts. So no earthly part which makes eclipse in a ruler's heart, as in that glorious planet, must come nigh the sun of justice. All such mists must fly. You're in an orb of brightness placed and fixed, and with no soil must honour be commixed. So to your worthy progress seal commends your lordship, with your grave and noble friends.
And Tracy?
The speech being ended, to add a little more help to the fainter apprehensions, the three merchants placed in the continent have referenced the Lord Mayor and Sheriffs, all three being this year brothers of this ancient and honourable society, which triple or threefold honour happened to this worthy company in the year 1577. Sir Thomas Ramsay then being Lord Mayor, and Master Nicholas Backhouse and Master Francis Boyer, Sheriffs. Having coherence with this year's honour, matched and paralleled with these three there as worthy successors, the Right Honourable Peter Proby, and the generous and nobly affected Master John Hodges and Sir Humphrey Hanford, Sheriffs and Aldermen.
So there we'll pause. So we've got here, I've just been starting to break this down into things we might call stage directions. So first of all, we have a mention that there's a service upon the water. There's a water show. We know nothing about the water show. We do not know. So Lord Mayor's travelled down from the Guildhall, goes to the river. Some water show occurs. We do not know what that is. So that's, again, a question of how we mark that question. Do we make references or do we have something that we create for that? Because last year we just sort of mentioned it was there. Do we do something more? Or do we wait that for another year to do more than mark that there is a water service? Because I don't know if there's there's no real continuity in between shows. So it's not like we can say, oh, it would be a bit like this, because, you know, each year it could be potentially quite different.
Yeah, 1623, there's a whole separate water show that Monday wrote, so that would make more sense in a way, because you could do something really interesting with the way the two speak to each other or don't.
So in a sense, we should leave that till next the next year. Because we're going to get water show aplenty then. God, thinking ahead now for 2023 now. Water shows. Okay, good. So the first one, they mentioned in passing the Throne of Virtue. The Throne of Virtue is not the first one. The first one is the continent of India, and we are at Paul's Churchyard. We've got a triumph. It's replenished with spice plants and trees bearing odour. So this is all about smells. So I'm wondering whether we should do something, whether there's something we can do about smell. Because that's a sense. If we're doing something live, again, it's slightly easier to do indoors because the amount of stuff you would need to impress an audience. Or if we're doing a travelling, just a relatively simple thing, if we've just got something we can hold to people. But, you know, we're still in a COVID-y world, so there's part of me going, here, sniff this, is not necessarily a great idea.
Probably chucking mace at people probably wouldn't be a good idea either.
No, but it's just the question, what are those smells? What spices are we possibly thinking of there? Lindsay, and then Tom.
Just having facetious ideas, really, but I'm going to throw them out there in the spirit of why not. For you know, sort of the thing to do on the water, could we you know, do a kind of Esther Williams number? Is there any virtue in that? And for the sense, could people not be holding, you know, these aerosols of Febreze or other scented items are available, and just sort of, you know, they always have sort of herby, florally kind of scents, you know, so spraying them and sniffing them around at the audience. I mean, it could be a kind of fun modern take, basically. So I merely throw it out there.
No, it's good. I mean, the problem always with anything like this is that we've got to be really careful of allergies or anything like that. So we could do the joke of a prop, but then we might be careful about not actually having anything in the prop. So it's just this problem, because, you know, there's some of these that might be big issues, or we would have to think, now that I'm thinking about it, going, yes, this could be very bad. Damn, that was a nice idea. Anyway, there might be more harmless things. We can research that. I did suggest for last year's water show that we should have someone comes on and says, there's the water show, and then super soakers hit them. I was talked out of doing that. As it happened, it rained, so it didn't matter.
I was going to say, it poured with rain, so that was the water show. But you could even have, like, people with Esther Williams production numbers on their phones showing them to the audience or something like that. I mean, there's ways of doing it which don't actually involve people having to get into water in their swimming costumes or whatever. There's possibilities, I think.
Tom?
Nutmeg allergies are apparently extremely rare.
Well, we can always advertise that, you know, the may contain nuts. Tom?
I just thought the attendants could... what do they use in church? The censers? They are quite big, and you waft them around. And even in the open air, they would be quite atmospheric. I mean, in a closed space, they can be slightly overpowering. But they do seem very efficient to create an ambience of exotic scent. So do they call them senses?
Yeah, absolutely. And of course, we've
slightly theatrical as well.
Yes, well, and we have got, you know, we've got the option, if we're in a situation where it is very simple and we don't have, you know, sets and props and things, or too much propage. We do, of course, in theory, have bodies. So we do have the Queen. We also have Commerce, Adventure and Traffic. Their costumes, they're habited like merchants, because, of course, these are the they want to associate their livery company, the grocers. We also have a bright figure bearing the inscription of knowledge, a sun appearing above the trees. Now, is that the figure, or is that separate? Is that a separate thing to the figure? What do we think? Because of just the nature of this sentence. Presented to our view, a bright figure bearing the inscription of knowledge, a sun appearing above the trees in brightest splendor and glory. Is that comma separating a thought, or is that a running thought?
It's in syntax.
I know. He's a sod, isn't he?
Not in syntax, but this is ridiculous. Because
is it, you know, a big sort of halo thing?
Another thing. Yeah,
he usually, I heard it as that it was the queen, but or one of the sort of figure that had been described before, at least. That's how it sounds, but whether that was Tracy's reading or whether that's what Mr. Middleton thought, but
I think the safe option would be to think it's something separate.
Okay, I'm gonna separate it, but with a question mark. Separate thing. So we got a figure of knowledge, or a figure bearing an inscription of knowledge. There's a sun, so maybe the sun appears when the queen appears, and that's part of that, or something. That's part of the tableau. I don't think we got a real indication of the sort of size or shape of the actual thing that they're standing on here. No, it's just the continent of India, so it's probably some sort of hillock, isn't it? It's going to be
four people in total, three of whom at least were probably children, is quite few. That might have been quite small.
Plus the queen as well. So you've got this figure of knowledge, commerce, adventure, and traffic, and the queen. So unless the queen is that figure bearing the inscription of knowledge, but I got the impression that it was a separate person. Or is it the Black Queen before mentioned? Is that... No, that's from earlier. So I think that's a separate figure. Am I wrong? I'm in a Schrodinger's figure moment now.
Right, it is, yeah. She's seeing the bright figure.
Yeah.
With the three merchants.
Yeah. So this is, a reference to trade. It's a reference to other people's trade with India. Is there sort of additional stuff on the nature of the trade that the Grocers Company or all of the companies are doing with foreign trade, and actually the choice of figures here in this particular pageant, Tracy?
Well, it's not India. It's what was often called East India, it's the East Indies, but actually it's the Spice Islands, which are in the Indian Ocean, I think. At this juncture, the English merchants were battling out with the Dutch for the very, very, very lucrative trade in these spices. So in fact, the very year before this show, there was a very nasty battle on one of the islands, which one? The Banda Islands, and the English were taken prisoner by the Dutch, and then it was very nasty, and they were threatened with execution and stuff like that. So that's kind of backdrop to it. They get so confused. Just to wait till 1634 if you want confused geography. That's the best one, or worst one. But we're not talking here about kind of invasion. We're not talking about colonial enterprises even. And we met in Virginia, yes, because that gets mentioned later on. But this is a trading arrangement, so it's slightly anticipation of that. The East India Company don't start getting really, really nasty until later in the 17th century.
What we've generally noted as we enter the 17th century in other texts as well is that not so much there's a sort of building the logic and the intellectual framework of colonialism, but not necessarily the enterprises are starting to catch up with the in actual physical sense. The question of how that fits into that sort of intellectual connection of representation here, because we've got representation of different figures. And so what about we thinking about the Black Queen here? What is the Black Queen saying? And were any thoughts about that particular speech? Because obviously we have a question for any performance practice that if we're doing this on the street, it has to be something that doesn't come across as a problem. If it's in an internal context, we can always prefix it with the kind of comments that we've been making now. But is this street doable is the question. And should it be street doable?
It wasn't comfortable reading. Especially the I forgot to know what she says now, but something along the lines of I am not of black complexion. You'd almost need a footnote there if he's, and I'm sure it's probably not as bad as it sounds, but it sounds really bad when I first read it.
It's certainly not as bad as some other contemporary works. I mean, I've always been very struck by that "I'm beauteous in my blackness" phrase. I'm not saying for a minute that it's a deeply progressive text, but it's a real, as I said in the chat, it's a real mixture. I mean, I would be inclined to kind of take advice on this, actually, short citizen scholars.
Yeah.
If we were going to do any kind of form of public staging of this, either it's just in front of a selected audience or in the outside, I wouldn't want to skip it because I think it's probably the best speech of the whole show, in my opinion. And it's very interesting because it's got this kind of, combination of different sorts of approaches to the Black Queen, I guess. I think kind of contextualising it would be very, very, very important.
Yeah, and that's where I'm thinking if we're doing a full sort of performance, I say full, but a full textual performance of the actual speeches, that would be something that we do in a indoor space with guests who are there to prefix and surround this, so that we give it full context and we have the right kind of guests who come in to talk about it as well, so that it's not reinforcing problems, because of course we'd also have to talk to the performers who might do this text. What would they actually think about it, and would they want to do it? Is the question as well. There's a question also of who is the figure bearing the inscription of knowledge, whereas the attendants in antique habits attended by Indians in antique habits. But the bright figure inscription bearing knowledge, what would the performer have looked like for that? Because that could lead us into very problematic routes, if knowledge appears like a sort of white saviour kind of figure, especially using the word bright there. So I'm just wondering about that. That's again a casting question, changes the fundamental meaning of what is actually happening in the text. I don't know if the text gives us any clues.
It's a real mixture. I know she's commanding the riches and sweetness of the East, and so on and so forth. She's certainly given a lot to say. This is a long speech from a female gender protagonist in civic pageantry or in any kind of stage drama of the period, really. I'm just trying to think of equivalents in stage plays, and I can't. Well, Cleopatra, I suppose. But that would kind of be it, really. So yeah, it's an interesting one. I think the who performs it is a kind of crucial question, because I think with very strong likelihood that whoever performed it in 1622 was blacked up.
Yes, and just to make it clear, we're not doing that. That isn't the kind of original practice performance that we're going to do. There are all sorts of options and questions about the rights and wrongs about doing that. We'll be guided by what people say around us as well. I think it, in the sense that it's not the kind of text, at least not in its totality, to be done on public land, as it were, because when we were talking about doing last year's show, the City of London were very clear about, the kinds of text you can and cannot do. This is a text that I don't think we could do, or at least we couldn't do without doing some edits. We might do a few bits of it, but I don't think you could do the entirety of it with its context there. And then, of course, we have this other sort of complication of these three merchants are also referencing previous Lord Mayor and sheriffs from the year 1577. Unless I misinterpreted that, because I'm sure we all know who Sir Thomas Ramsay, Sir Master Nicholas Backhouse, and Master Francis Bowyer were. I mean, would there be visual signifiers to indicate that, or have I just misunderstood what that little sequence is saying? Because they say it's, they always like to reuse something to reiterate, but the way Middleton uses it, to add a little more help to the fainter apprehensions, is an interesting turn of phrase. Unless there's some additional text that we don't have in this iteration.
This particular show does ask a lot of the kind of reader slash spectator in terms of just imagining what's being described, because I think some of it is kind of not possible. I mean, you're absolutely right. These three figures are being two very different things at the same time. And Middleton, I think Middleton is not just vague but evasive about how you might actually present a Lord Mayor and two sheriffs from 40 years previously.
Mm.
Unless they're carrying placards with the names on. Which, even though it wouldn't mean much, probably.
Yeah, I mean, it's not unknown for them for that to happen. I mean, we didn't fully do that with our 1621 reconstruction, but they had banners with names of previous Lord Mayors. At least they were moderately famous Lord Mayors, whereas these seem weirdly obscure people. Oh, yeah. So Master Nicholas, yeah, I remember him. Oh, yeah, he was, yeah.
I think it's just Middleton is just sort of desperately trying to find some previous examples of all three of the chief officers being from the grocers.
Mm.
That's the only ones he can find.
Yeah, and maybe it's just a grocers thing, sod the rest of the audience. And that's the thing about Lord Mayor shows as well, is, the primary audience is the incoming Lord Mayor, but also, presumably, the surrounding primary witnesses who will be grocers and then other livery company. Yeah.
After all. Yeah, absolutely.
Mm.
Even more so in the next one. I think that's what's interesting, because Proby kind of disappears a little bit because he wasn't a grocer, really. He'd only been a grocer for about a week. so, yeah, they're sort of trying to sort of square peg round hole to an extent, really.
Mm. Yeah, well, they paid for it. What, 220 quid or something was the gross? Something like that. Though the actual overall contributions for everything else was considerably more. Anyway, that doesn't matter to us at this stage. That's the kind of detail that might make it to an indoor live show, but it's almost certainly if we did any outdoor eventing, would not. Okay, second pageant. We've probably moved a little bit further along the map. We're going to be at the Little Conduit. Not a big conduit, a little conduit. So if I could ask Greg to read the prose, and Lindsay, I think you are the Speaker of Antiquity.
By this time, his lordship, being gracefully conducted towards the chariot of fame, which awaits his honour's approach near the little conduit in Cheap, Antiquity, a grave and reverend personage, with a golden register book in his hand, gives life to these words.
Objects of years and reverence greet mine eye, a sight most pleasing to antiquity. I never could unclasp this book of fame, where worthies dwell by a distinguished name, at a more comely season. I shall tell things sprung from truth, near kin to miracle. With that of later days I first begin, so back into the deeper times again. I only touch thy memory, which I know in thankfulness can never be found slow, with heaven's miraculous mercy, to thy health, after so long a sickness, all the wealth which thou with an unusuring hand hast got, which is not the least wonder, worthy note. Truth makes me speak things freely, cannot be a greater work than thy recovery. Nine brethren senators, thy seniors all, whose times had been before thee, Death did call to their eternal peace from this degree, leaving their earthly honour now to thee. Think and be thankful still. This seems the more another observation kept in store. For 17 senators since thy time were chose, and to this minute not one dead of those. Those are not usual notes, nor here it ends. The court and city, two most noble friends, have made exchange elate. I read from hence there has gone some most worthy citizens up to the court's advance. In lieu of that, you have a courtier now, your magistrate, a servant to Elizabeth the Blessed, since to King James that reigns with Solomon's breast, kept the records for both. From the queen took charge of 300 horse, 3,000 foot, 4 attributes cleaves to this man of men, a scholar, soldier, courtier, citizen. These are no usual touches. To conclude, like to his life, with blessings so endued, has chose his brotherhood, men of that fame, for bounty, amity, and honoured name. The city bounds transcend not in their place, and their word makes them prosper, God grant grace. Honour they never wanted, when wast seen, but they had senators to their brethren. Nay, one record here to make joy more glad, I find 17 that were in scarlet clad, all at one time of this fraternity. Now 5, for this hour's honour brings forth 3. Fame triple will make triple virtue strive, at whose triumphant throne you next arrive.
For further illustration, there are contained in antiquity's golden legend the names of many worthies of ancient time, by whom this noble fraternity has received much honour, such as were the worthy and famous Andrew Bockrell, who was Lord Mayor of this city the 16th year of King Henry III, and continued in the magistracy 7 years together. Also, the noble Alan de la Zouch, who for his good government in the time of his mayoralty was by King Henry III created both a baron and of this realm and Lord Chief Justice of England. Also that famous worthy Sir Thomas Knowles, twice Lord Mayor of this honourable city, which said Sir Thomas began at his own charge that famous rebuilding of Guildhall in London, and other memorable works began at his own and other memorable works both in the city and in his own company, re-edifying also St. Anthony's Church, with many others that are fair ornaments to memory, viz. Sir William Sevenoke, Sir Robert Chichley, Sir Stephen Brown, Sir Henry Cable, Sir William Laxton, etc., who by those virtues that they were most addicted unto in their lifetime, are illustrated by persons of brightness in the throne of virtue. The next part of triumph that presents itself, next beneath antiquity, sits authority placed between wisdom and innocence, holding a naked sword, a serpent wound about the blade thereof, 2 doves standing upon the crossbar of the hilt, and 2 hands meeting at the pommel, intimating mercy and justice, accompanied with magistracy, who holds in his hand a key of gold, signifying both the key of knowledge and of confidence. The city magistrate taking into his trust the custody of the king's chamber, the proper title of the city, and which key of God also stands in his lordship's crest, viz. An ostrich, holding a key of gold in his mouth, his neck circled with a golden crown.
So, yes, we have, again, a series of interesting technical questions about this one. So, the opening of that doesn't give us very much. Antiquities, a grave and reverend personage with a golden register book in his hand. We get details of the register. So Sir Andrew Bockerill. No one going to say here, sir. Good. So yes, got a register of all these various names listed with a helpful et cetera. So presumably they are visible in this listing. It's again, it's always this question: how much of this is visible, and how much of this is just, well, that's what I meant. I'm assuming that none of that's read out. And then it's illustrated by persons of brightness in the throne of virtue. So beneath antiquity sits authority. So that's two people. Placed between wisdom and innocence. That's four. Holding a naked sword, a serpent round about the blade thereof, two doves standing upon the crossbar of the hilt, and two hands meeting at the pommel. How much would that have been visible? Seems an awful lot of detail for something that... Because if they're holding the sword, you know, they'll be occluding some of it with their hands and their arms and their cloak. So, interesting. The amount of detail for things that I don't think anyone in the audience would really be able to see.
No, I think some of the kind of main, like, the, you know, the magistracy with the key of gold stuff would have been probably quite familiar to people. Possibly the sword of the serpent, that would have been all right. But other than that, what Middleton's, I think, trying to do is to make these, frankly, rather obscure previous grocer people into something more significant by giving them these kind of allegorical qualities. But yeah, I mean, it's always the question, isn't it, really? I did actually look for Peter Proby's coat of arms, and I found one, but it doesn't have an ostrich in it, so I'm not sure where the ostrich came from. Sorry.
Oh, well.
Yeah.
Can't have it all. But they're also accompanied by magistracy, who holds key of gold for various reasons, in which key of gold stands in his lordship crest with an ostrich holding a key of gold in his mouth. So do we actually have an ostrich, or is it just on the coat of arms or thing there on the key of gold in his lordship's crest? So... do we actually have an ostrich on this pageant, or is it just part of the part of his emblem?
It'll just be the coat of arms. I think they're quite common, aren't they? It's picked up by the key of gold. Is also in that, as well as being held by magistracy. I can't remember what we thought about this one last time, but there's a signal lack of imagination in this particular device, isn't there? It's very... there's nothing very zingy about it, really.
No, and they're both relatively small cast-wise, aren't they? I mean, we've only got, what, four or five people on this one? Five? Yeah. One, two, three, four, five. Yeah, five people. Four.
Actually, I just thought about that. There's usually seven devices, and there certainly aren't seven in this one. There's, what, four?
Well, overall, there's four, and then there's sort of the repetition for the Lord Mayor's house at the end. But yeah, apart from that, there's not a lot going on here.
Cut price production, clearly.
Yeah. Right, they didn't even have a proper ostrich. I mean, you know, if it's just on his lordship's crest, I demand more ostrich. I'm very disappointed. Yeah. So what are we calling this one? This is the Chariot of Fame. There we are. We had fame last year, but this is antiquity, specifically speaking. So,
I think the speech itself is as dry as dust.
Well, I mean, it is a bit dry. It is also a bit similar to a previous version of antiquity that Middleton might have written a few years earlier. It's not exactly the same, but it's a bit of a list, isn't it? And in fact, it's not dissimilar to bits we had last year. There's the sort of King James, isn't he great? It's not quite the same, but there is a sort of just a little hint of similar sort of themes. Actually, maybe I'm being a bit unfair on that.
No, I think you're both right. I'm gonna have to chat because it might be, if Proby was translated to the grocers fairly late in the day, they might not have had much time or indeed much appetite for it. I mean, the text says, I think in his speech or elsewhere, that Proby chose the grocers. I don't know, that might be possible. He clearly was a man of great kind of influence and contact. So, but going by what happened with the drapers the year before, they didn't tend to like that kind of thing happening to them. So there may be an element of that as well.
Yeah. Okay, well, we should go on to pageant three, or the third chunk. It's not pageant, really, pageant three. We get mentioning of the fourth pageant later on. We don't really have any text for that either. It's sort of, so let's go for the last set of witnesses, and I'm the reader, and then it's Tom is Virtue, and then we'll basically power through to the... before the speech at night. So we'll just do this little chunk here. His Lordship, by this time, arriving at the Throne of Virtue near St. Lawrence Lane End, receives this greeting from her deity.
I see great power approach. Here makes a stand. Would it with virtue aught? For some commands seem so complete in self-opinion's eye, it will scarce look upon me, but passes by. As if the essence of my deity were raised by power, and not power raised by me. But let such rulers know that so commanded, they build the empire of their hopes on sand. Still this remains, with eye upon me fixed, as if he sought to have his splendours mixed with these of mine, which makes authority meek. And I'm so sick of love to those that seek, I cannot choose but yield, nor does it wrong great power to come to virtue to be strong. Being but a woman, merciful and mild, therein is heavens with greater glory styled, that makes weak things as clemency and right sway power, which would else rule by all which else rule all by might. It may be said you did but late pass by some part of triumph that spake virtuously. And one such speech suffices. 'Tis not so in taking your office. There you go from court to court before you be confirmed. In this high place with patriarch it's teemed. From virtue, if to virtue you resort. But is it the same course you have in court? In settling of your honour, which should be redoubled rather, that I hope to see so power and virtue when they fill one seat, the city's blessed, the magistrate complete.
At the close of the speech, this throne of virtue with all her celestial concomitants and the other parts of the triumph take leave of his lordship for that time, until after the feast at Guildhall, rests from service. Effectively ends that particular bit of material, isn't it? Yes, so that's pageant number three. Yeah, so at the close of the speech, this throne of virtue with all her celestial concomitants and all the other parts of the triumph take leave of his lordship for that time, until after the feast at Guildhall, rests from service. So, yeah, that's it for this particular it's a difficult, tricky one, isn't it, of what's going on. Because we have so little data that all we've got there is the throne of virtue. It's at the St. Lawrence Lane End. There are some celestial concomitants. So virtue and some backing singers. That's what we got there. Any thoughts?
And then later on, it gets incredibly complicated.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's like because the next one is unbelievably complicated. And so yeah, it's a tricky one as to how it works.
I mean, I'm increasingly thinking this one would be a real massive challenge to stage in any meaningful sense. So yeah, doing something different with it, I think, would be making benefit of that. That it's, I mean, in some ways, it's kind of precursor of what's going to happen the following year, because Middleton gets very, very carried away with the sort of idea of virtue and integrity, and he tries to stage integrity, which is like the whole point of integrity is it's not showy. So he's trying to show something which is not showy. And it's wonderful text, but it's kind of, yeah, again, a bit of a conundrum, really.
Yeah. What do we think of the speech overall? How was virtue for us? Any thoughts on virtue?
I liked it. I preferred it to Antiquity's speech. I thought Tom read it well. I thought that I'm so sick of love to those that seek it cannot choose but yield was amazing, actually. Really strong. Reminded me a bit of Fitzgerald's speeches in Changeling.
Okay. I'm going to say, actually, Greg, could I ask you to read the rest of the prose to be a sod from after, but the feast ended. Could I ask you to read in that? And then we'll go through and we'll probably pause just before the speech. Yeah, we'll pause before the speech at night. So, Greg, if you go from but the feast ended, that would be lovely. So they've all gone to the guild hall for some nosh and they're moving on.
But the feast ended. The whole state of the triumph attends upon his lordship both to St. Paul's and homeward. And in Soper Lane, two parts of the triumph stand ready planted. Viz, the throne of virtue, and the globe of honour, which globe, suddenly opening and flying into eight cants or distinct parts, discovers in a twinkling eight bright personages most gloriously decked, representing, as it were, the inward man, the intentions of a virtuous and worthy beast, by the graces of the mind and soul, such as clear conscience, divine speculation, peace of heart, integrity, watchfulness, equality, providence, impartiality, each expressed by its proper illustration. And because man's perfection can receive no constant attribute in this life, the cloud of frailty, and ever and anon, shadowing and darkening our brightest intentions, makes good the morality of those cants or parts when they fall and close into the full round of a globe, again showing that as the brightest day is overcasting, so the best men in this life have their imperfections, and worldly mists oftentimes interpose the clearest cogitations, and yet that but for a season, turning in the end, like the mounting of this engine, to their everlasting brightness, converting itself to a canopy of stars. At the four corners below are placed the four cardinal virtues, wisdom, justice, fortitude, and temperance, by each of them fixed a little stream or banner in which are displayed the arms of this honourable city, the Lord Mayors, the Grocers, and the noble East India Companies. The outparts of the globe showing the world's type in countries, seas, and shipping. Whereon is depicted or drawn ships that have been fortunate to this kingdom by their happy and successful voyages, as also that prosperous plantation in the colony of Virginia and the Bermudas, with all good wishes to the governors, traders, and adventurers onto those Christianly reformed lands. The speech at night, presented by Honor, a personage mounted on the top of this unparalleled masterpiece of invention and art, the globe or orb of Honor.
By virtue you came last, and who brings home true honor must by virtue always come. The right path you have took, then, still proceed, for 'tis continuance crowns each worthy deed. Behold this globe of honour, every part it is composed of to a noble heart applies instruction. When 'tis closed and round, it represents the world and all that's found within the labouring circle of man's days, adventures, dangers, cares, and steepy ways, which, when a wise man thinks on, straight he mounts to heavenly cogitations, and accounts the vexing spirit of care and labour vain, lifting himself to his full height again. And as this engine does in eight parts rise, discovering eight bright figures, so the wise from this life's slumber roused, which time deludes, opens his heart to eight beatitudes. And as I, honour, overtopping all, here fix my foot on this orbicular ball, over the world expressing my command, as I in this contemptuous posture stand, so every good and understanding spirit makes but use only of this life to inherit an everlasting living, making friends of mammon's heaps got by unrighteous ends, which happy thou standst free from, the more white sits honour on thee, and the more cost, and the cost more bright, thy noble brotherhood this day bestows. Expense is graced when substance follows shows. Now to no higher pitch of praise I'll come. Love brought thee forth, and honour brings thee home.
For the body of the whole triumph, with all the proper graces and ornaments of art and workmanship, the reputation of those rightly appertain to the deserts of Master Garrett Christmas, an exquisite master in his art, and a performer above his promises. Apologies, Rob, I was all ready then.
That's all right. Performer above his promises, Master Garrett Christmas. Isn't he a fabulous chap? So good, they use the globe again. They park it round to the Lord Mayor's house and goes, hey, look, there's a thing. And put that in place. We seem to have lost Tracy. So I assume that's internet things. So we have this absolutely enormous thing. So if any kind of performance for this, we've got this massive globe, Tracy seems to be back in the room. Hello, Tracy.
Yeah, sorry about that. Laptop's dying.
So we've got.
Sorted out how to stage this thing while I was gone.
Hmm.
Did you sort out how to stage the 8-part globe engine?
I mean, I don't even know how to design it, let alone how to stage, you know, build the damn thing. There's lots of clues about what it looks like, but it's so good they use it twice. I mean, it's not just that it's there for the Globe of Honour, the fourth pageant. They wheel it round to the Lord Mayor's house for the end of the day and leave it in place there. So for the final speech by honour, I quite like the speech by honour that I quite liked. I mean, the thing about number four is we don't have a speech. We just have a description of a thing. So we don't actually have any text for that, which is nice. Yeah, so many globes. So many globes. How many globes? Yeah, well, I say so many globes. So much globe.
It's a globe. It opens. It flies into eight cancelled distinct parts, which within which eight bright personages most gloriously decked, it representing all these various things. When they close into a globe again, that is showing, God knows how, various important things. And then it converts itself into a canopy of stars. Four colours below, four cardinal virtues with streamers and banners. And some ships. Oh, God.
Yeah, well, I think we can run to the four cardinal virtues with some banners. I think we can run to that. That's fine. But yeah, it does feel like they've gone, right, okay, we can afford what we've got this. Garrick turned up and said, hi, guys, I've got this great idea. It's a globe. It's going to be fabulous. It's going to do this and this. You can put whatever you like in it, you know, come up with some stuff. But it's going to be amazing. What's the budget for the rest of the show? There isn't one. They've blown the budget on the globe.
All right, it says I've got a golden book somewhere. We'll work around that.
Yeah, use some old props, tart it up a bit. I'll give you a fiver to cover the rest of the show, but this is where all the money's at. So I'm quite glad we're not planning to try and do anything big with this one, because I think we'd just fail, even if we had, you know, the same sort of budget we had last year. This is where doing something indoors, you know, where you could do some artwork. I feel like we need to commission some artwork to try and visualise what this might be like, or different art interpretations of this, because that might be a way in. Because, of course, we have no text. I mean, apart from having someone reading this bit of text, which, again, wouldn't work on the street, but we could do if we were doing it indoors. We've got a double-pronged approach. We were thinking maybe that there might be some walking tours type stuff during the day, and then with maybe snippets of speeches where appropriate, but then maybe a more full performance in the evening with commentary is sort of the idea.
I suppose one of the ways of approaching it would be like a, as you say, artwork, but stop motion. You've basically got a Terry's chocolate orange.
Yeah.
It was a small budget. Middleton and Garrett Christmas got £220. All four devices, printing 500 books, all the carpentry, painting, carving, finding the actors, costumes, banners, green mail, devils, fireworks, £220, which is a lot less than Middleton got in 1613 from the grocer.
Yeah, but I mean, they are fundamental. I mean, 1613 was massive. I mean, that really was, wasn't it? That was that time when they really were at their peak in terms of ridiculousness and scale. Whereas here we're at a slightly more sensible level. But this, again, it's still the fact we only have four pageants, really.
Well, they're spending £162, which is not a lot less, just on the coat gowns, blue gowns for the poor men. So, yeah.
Yeah. What was the budget for last year? I should know that off the top of my head.
That's 21.
Because we did it last year, so I should remember.
It's sort of broken down, really. £300 is what they took in from the members to cover it. So it's a fair bit more.
So slight budget, a bit of a budget decrease there. Almost a third less.
Yeah.
Well, which means you get a third fewer pageants, as it were.
You do.
Yeah. Basically.
Yeah, I mean, those sheep didn't come cheap, you know.
No, I mean. Noble sheep. I mean, we've got the speech of honour that works reasonably well. I quite like the honour speech of honour. I don't know if Lindsay agrees. You were reading it.
I thought honour was a bit less dry than antiquity, and sort of seems to be sort of like, I'm here, standing on the world, and, you know, all of that. I mean, it's quite a nice, closing image, I suppose. But I think I didn't really have time to look through this a lot before we started, and I think if I had, I'd have noted and punctuated and sort of worked out whether changes in gear were happening prior to reading it cold. And, you know, if we bash through it again, hopefully I'll be able to make a bit more sense of it.
Well, that's actually sort of pretty much the next phase of what I want to do. I basically just want to run the speeches back to back. So I'm just sort of going to cue everyone in as we go, just to make sure we know which pageant we're on. But otherwise, I just want to let the speeches run through one after the other. I'll introduce the next one and just get a sense, just get them to flow. So if just cue up your individual speech or speeches, because Lindsay, I think you've got two. Everybody else has one. We'll let that fly. It's interesting. Honest speech, in a sense, does function as a sort of ta-da for the big globe, because again, it's once behold this globe of honor. It's like now that we're alone, Lord Mayor and I, I can talk you through this private performance of my wonderful globe. that kind of thing. So Greg, you are first up. Just note, Greg, go with lave. Lave meaning wash. That's a gloss rather than a correction or anything. Enos, I'm not sure which to go for. Dealer's choice. So we start this particular procession. We are at St. Paul's Churchyard, and we have the Throne of Virtue and the Queen surrounded by three habited merchants and a bright figure of fame bearing the inscription of knowledge.
You that have eyes of judgment and discern things at the best of man and life concern, draw near. This black is but my native dye, but view me with an intellectual eye. As wise men shoot their beams forth, you'll then find a change in the complexion of the mind. I'm beauteous in my blackness. O ye sons of fame and honour, through my best part runs a spring of living waters, clear and true. Found first by knowledge, which came first by you and your examples. Blessed commerce, that by exchange settles such happiness of gums and fragrant spices. I confess my climate heaven does with abundance bless, and those you have from me, but what are they, compared with odours whose scent ne'er decay? And those I have from you, plants of your youth, the savour of eternal life, sweet truth, exceeding all the odoriferous scent from the beds of spices ever went. I that command, being prosperously possessed, the riches and the sweetness of the east, to that famed mountain Taurus spreading forth my balmy arm whose height does kiss the north, and to the sea Enos lave this land, accounting my blessings not in those to stand. Though they be large and fruitful, but confess all wealth consists in Christian holiness. To such celestial knowledge I was led by English merchants first enlightened, in honour of whose memory only three I instance here, all of this brotherhood free, to whose fames the great honour of this hour aptly belongs, but that man of power, the first and chiefest, to whose worth so clear justice have given her sword up for a year. And as yon sun his perfect splendour shows, cheering the plants, and no clouds interpose his radiant comforts, so no earthly part which makes eclipses in a ruler's heart, as in that glorious planet must come nigh the sun of justice, all such mists must fly. You're in an orb of brightness placed and fixed, and with no soil must honour be commixed. So to your worthy progress, zeal commends your lordship with your grave and noble friends.
And we shift now to the little conduit in Cheapside and the chariot of fame. There is the figure of antiquity, a grave and reverend personage with a golden register book in his hand.
Objects of years and reverence greet mine eye, a sight most pleasing to antiquity. I never could unclasp this book of fame, where worthies dwell by a distinguished name, at a more comely season. I shall tell things sprung from truth, near kin to miracle. With that of later days I first begin, so back into the deeper times again. I only touch the memory, which I know in thankfulness can never be found slow, with heaven's miraculous mercy, to thy health, after so long a sickness, all the wealth which thou, with an unusuring hand, hast got, which is not the least wonder-worthy note. Truth makes me speak things freely, cannot be a greater work than thy recovery. 9 brethren senators, thy seniors all, whose times had been before thee, death did call to their eternal peace from this degree, leaving their earthly honour now to thee. Think and be thankful still. This seems the more another observation kept in store. For 17 senators since thy time were chose, and to this minute not one dead of those. Those are not usual notes, nor here it ends. The court and city, two most noble friends, have made exchange late. I read from hence, there has gone some most worthy citizens up to the court's advance. In lieu of that, you have a courtier, now your magistrate, a servant to Elizabeth the Blessed, since to King James that reigns with Solomon's breast, kept records for both. From the Queen took charge of 300 horse, 3,000 foot. 4 attributes cleaves to this man of men, a scholar, soldier, courtier, citizen. These are no usual touches. To conclude, like to his life with blessings so endued, has chose his brotherhood, men of that fame, for bounty, amity, and honoured name. The city bounds transcend not in their place, and their words make some prosper, God grant grace. Honour they never wanted, when wast seen, but they had senators to their brethren. Nay, one record here, to make joy more glad, I find 17 that were in scarlet clad, all at one time of this fraternity. Now 5, for this hour's honour brings forth 3. Fame triple will make triple virtue strive, at whose triumphant throne you next arrive.
And his lordship moves on now to the throne of virtue placed near St. Lawrence Lane End, and he receives this greeting from her deity.
I see great power approach. Here makes a stand. Would it with virtue ought? For some commands seem so complete in self-opinion's eye, it will scarce look on me, but passes by. As if the essence of my deity were raised by power, and not power raised by me. But let such rulers know that so command they build their empire on their hopes, and their hopes on sand. Still, this remains with eye upon me fixed, as if he sought to have his splendours mixed with these of mine, which makes authority meek. And I'm so sick of love to those that seek, I cannot choose but yield, nor does it wrong great power to come to virtue to be strong. Being but a woman, merciful and mild, therein is heaven with greater glory styled. That makes weak things as clemency and right sway power, which would else rule by might. It may be said you did but late pass by some part of triumph that spake virtuously, and one such speech suffices. 'Tis not so in taking your office, there you go, from court to court before you be confirmed in this high place. With patroship it is termed, for virtue, if to virtue you resort, it is but the same course you have in court, in settling of your honour, which should be redoubled rather, that I hope to see. So power and virtue, when they fill one seat, the city's blessed, the magistrate complete.
And there is a glorious demonstration of a globe, but that is wheeled round to the Lord Mayor's house for the speech at night presented by Honour, a personage mounted on the top of this unparalleled masterpiece of invention and art, the globe or orb of Honour.
By virtue you came last, and who brings home true honour must by virtue always come. The right path you have took then, still proceed, for 'tis continuance crowns each worthy deed. Behold this globe of honour, every part it is composed of, to a noble heart applies instruction. When 'tis closed and round, it represents the world and all that's found within the labouring circle of man's days, adventures, dangers, cares, and steepy ways, which, when a wise man thinks on, straight he mounts to heavenly cogitations and accounts the vexing spirit of care and labour vain, lifting himself to his full height again. And as this engine does in 8 parts rise, discovering 8 bright figures, so the wise from this life's slumber roused, which time deludes, opens his heart to 8 beatitudes. And as I, honour, overtopping all, here fix my foot on this orbicular ball, over the world expressing my command, as I in this contemptuous posture stand, so every good and understanding spirit makes but use only of this life to inherit an everlasting living, making friends of mammon's heap, got by unrighteous ends, which happy thou standst free from, the more white sits honour on thee, and the cost more bright thy noble brotherhood this day bestows. Expense is graced when substance follows shows. Now to no higher pitch of praise I'll come. Love brought thee forth, and honour brings thee home.
And honour brings the Lord Mayor home. It does flow a lot better when you sort of let it do that. And there's some nice things. I mean, there's things popping out of me that didn't pop out the first time because I was sort of doing things the last time, whereas this time I sort of actually listened. Speech of virtue, being but a woman. Was the but necessary, Middleton? It slightly turns me off that speech somewhat. This is some lots of interesting things. I quite like the way the initial address as well. I like virtues. I see great power approach. You know, it's like, ha ha, aren't you amazing, Lord Mayor? Greg, you've been a Lord Mayor. Do you feel, when all these people are saying such wonderful things about you, do you feel, you know, a lift in your soul?
Not so much this year. I tell you what, if I'd have been, I don't know if the previous Lord Mayor turned up for the next year's, but I can see Barkham going, well, I got a better bloody deal this time.
Well, I feel that's a legitimate part of our show, whatever form it takes, is, of course, to acknowledge. So, you're definitely invited.
Coming. Yeah. The date's in the diary, mate.
Yeah, so and if we can get your costume back, we've just got to make sure the new one looks better.
Oh, absolutely.
I think we've had reference to, the previous one being about for the sort of handover ceremony, so...
He's at Whitehall. I'd imagine he's probably there for the day, but nobody mentions him after that. One thing we didn't comment on, which I must mention, because it made me snort, was Middleton trying to make the best of a bad job, I think, in terms of the context of the, of Proby's election. He basically says he was the 10th choice.
Which speaks to that in?
Senators, thy seniors all, whose times had been before thee, death did call to their eternal peace. Earthly honour now to thee. 10th choice. Brilliant.
Bless. Yeah, a lot of people died for you to get this post.
Actual? What? Yeah.
I mean, it's interesting because when we were doing last year's, it was that sense of, we had a similar session to this one in the sense that we sort of going, you know, what is this? What are we, you know, what does it land? Does it do the things that we're sort of, you know, that we expect from drama rather than from this kind of pageant? I think actually that second time round, it was sort of doing for me the sort of things that last year's actually did. In many ways, I mean, this one is a more problematic text because of the nature of embodiment of the that initial speech, and also just a couple of other things that crop up. But that, yeah, that gives us an opportunity, as I say, to bring in other people to actually talk about what this text is doing, and lean more into the sort of the educational end of this, is actually saying, look, what is this saying about the time? What is this saying about the various projects going on? Where is this heading? Where is this come from? And to bring in more collaborators who can speak to this more than we can. I think, you know, we've got to be fair that, you know, we are not necessarily a wholly representative body of people. And we can bring in other voices and other peoples. Any final thoughts in the room? I think we've got, I've got an idea in my head now of the challenges and issues of this text, both practical of the globe, what the hell do we do about the globe, as well as ideological, what do we do with what this text is saying. Lots of pragmatic questions in the usual sense of, otherwise all we need to do is find some children and get them to learn some lines, and then they'll make us all look bad. Which is what generally happened last time. They were so good. So for those watching at home, there will be more on this. There will be, watch out on our Twitter feed and other announcements and additional bits and pieces that will go out there. This, as I say, is just a rough look through the text to again remind ourselves. Actually, in a sense, we've sort of repeated a lot of what we did for the first look, just with a lot more wiggle room. We rushed the first look. There will be better things coming down the line. Greg, do you have any final thoughts you want to throw in before I close the session?
Just roll on October the 29th, 2022.
Lindsay, any final thoughts?
Once we did it the first time, that helped me to kind of understand what I was aiming at for the second time round. So it made a lot more sense to me as I was reading it, and I think more fun, you know, more fun can be had with it for sure. Nothing beyond that. Sadly, I happen to know already that I'm not going to be able to come on the 29th of October. Oh, I know. I'm so sorry, but I already know this to be a fact. I'll be looking forward to the pictures and the videos and everything else that's available.
And if we do it indoors, we might be able to do proper videos this time as well, with synced audio and everything. Tom, any final thoughts?
Just as Lindsay said, the more you read it, the more idea you can get.
Tracy, any final thoughts from you?
There's something extremely passionate, in terms of intellectually passionate, about that final speech in particular. And I think it's because here Middleton is saying what he really believes. And I think that you know, doesn't necessarily work very well in the context of civic pageantry, but as a kind of a presentation of an argument, I think it's really, you know, really powerful, actually. So, I don't know. It just presents us with even more problems, actually. But I think you know, my basic conclusion is we have to do this in bits and think about the bits and contextualise the bits. But I think it'd be a very interesting way to do it. And we want to do something different this year anyway, so here we go.
Right, so all that remains is for us to thank all the wonderful readers for all their wonderful reading. Thank you very much, everyone, and goodbye. If you've enjoyed this episode and would like to hear more, then consider throwing us a coffee on ko-fi.com/beyondshakespeare. Or you can become a regular patron at patreon.com/beyondshakespeare. Links in the show description.